This is Kurt Benrud for the Triangle Radio Reading Service with another edition of Did You Know?
This is Para Tolson. This program's designed for a print and visually impaired audience.
This is Bob Martin, and I had the strangest experience going home last week.
Oh, dare we ask what happened?
No, but you know he's going to tell us anyway. So, what happened?
Well, I was driving down the road when all of a sudden I saw a sign that said, "If you lived here, you'd be home already." And I said to myself, "Self, you would." And it looked like a nice place, so Self and I stopped the car and got out to give it a closer examination. It really was nice. There was a swimming pool that I don't have, and a big grass area that I don't have to mow, and flower gardens which I don't have to take care of. So, I decided to move in.
And did you?
Well, that's when I started running into problems. The sign said that if I lived there, I'd be home. But my keys didn't fit any of the doors. And one door was open, so I looked in. But there were people there that I didn't even know. Plus, there was a lot of yelling going on, especially from those people in my house that I didn't know.
So what did you do?
I decided to go back to where I used to live and check the address to see if that was at the right place.
And were you?
Sure was. Plus, all of my stuff was still there.
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, because there was another sign that said, "Same day move-in." So I decided to go back and tell them that I changed my mind. I was going to stay where I am. Or was. Even though when I got to the sign and am I where I was, I wasn't yet home yet, but I know there were a lot of flags around the place, but I couldn't find it.
I wouldn't worry about it, Bob.
But I didn't leave a deposit. They won't care?
Not in the slightest.
Oh, that's a relief. And you know, it will still be a lot quieter without all that noise. And I don't like all those people that were in my bedroom.
I'm glad we could help. And speaking of flags, did you know that looking back in history on April 4th, 1818, the Flag Act of 1818 was passed, which finally established the nature of the American flag. From that day on, the flag would consist of 13 alternating red and white stripes to represent the 13 original colonies, and the number of stars in the blue field would match the number of states in the Union.
Here's a little history of our flag. We're all aware of the Betsy Ross story. It's most likely not true. Here's what we do know. On January 1st, 1776, General George Washington announced the formal existence of the Continental Army. A huge ceremony was planned to celebrate this event. The celebration took place on Prospect Hill in Somerville, Massachusetts, and Washington ordered a flag for the event.
Did you know that the flag that flew that day consisted of 13 alternating red and white stripes and a Union Jack in the upper left-hand corner? The stripes symbolized the colonies united against tyranny, and the Union Jack signified loyalty to the British Constitution and the hope for reconciliation with England. This pennant was called the Grand Union Flag and was the official flag of the Continental Army until the Declaration of Independence was signed.
Even though ties were now severed with England and the Grand Union flag had to go, nothing was done about a replacement for almost a year. In June of 1777, the Continental Congress met to plan defenses for an expected attack on Philadelphia. When that and other pressing business was taken care of, then attention was turned to the flag. The following resolution was passed. Resolved that the flag of the 13 United States be 13 stripes, alternating red and white, and that the Union be 13 stars, white in a blue field, representing a new constellation.
There was no mention made of who offered the resolution or if any celebration was made at its unfurling. Apparently, no one at the time thought it was important enough to mention, and the lack of detail showed in the first products. The red, white, and blue probably were not patriotic. They were some of the few colors local dyers had.
Stripes were the easiest things to sew, since early flags had to be made by hand. And the stars were not identical. Some had 4 points, some 5 points, and even up to 8. The stars were also arranged in squares, circles, rectangles, X's, and even in one long row.
One thing fairly certain was that Betsy Ross didn't have anything to do with it. That story didn't surface until 1870 when Ross's grandson, William Canby, delivered a paper to the Pennsylvania Historical Society and made the claim, according to Canby, who said he got the story from his grandmother.
According to Canby, in June of 1776, Washington came to his grandmother with a crude drawing of the 13 stripes and a field of 13 six-pointed stars. Betsy suggested that five-pointed stars would be easier to draw, and Washington agreed. She made the flag, and when it was taken to the Pennsylvania State House, Congress adopted it.
Canby was telling the story in 1870. This was post-Civil War, with the country trying to put itself back together. Clearly, the country needed stories like this and quickly believed it. It ignores the fact that such a request would not have come before any Declaration of Independence was announced.
Then there's the fact that when Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson went to France as emissaries and were asked what the new American flag looked like, they got it wrong. They said it was 13 stripes, alternating red, white, and blue.
And lastly, Washington did not receive his first flag from the Continental Congress until 1783, and historians are not agreed on what the flag looked like. Apparently, at the time of the country's origin, the Founding Fathers were not majorly concerned about the new flag.
It's time for some Did You Know quickies. How about the origins of the names for foreign currencies? Did you know the English pound may go back to Anglo-Saxon days when silver was made into coins called sterling? 240 of them weighed a pound.
Did you know that the Italian lira comes from the Latin word for pound?
Did you know the Greek drachmas came from a word that means handful?
Did you know the Dutch guilder was originally made from gold and comes from the same root as the word gilded?
Did you know the Russian ruble comes from the word that means cut off? It comes from a time when silver bars were cut off to make coins.
Did you know that peso means weight?
Did you know that rial means royal?
Did you know the French franc comes from the phrase francorum rex, which means king of the Franks?
Did you know that escudo from Portugal refers to the shield on the coin?
Did you know that the Japanese yen means round and it describes the shape of the coin?
Did you know the dollar comes from the early 1520s, when silver, mined from the Joachimsthal mine in Bavaria, was turned into a coin called Joachimsthaler? It was shortened to Thaler and then to dollar.
Since we've come to American currency, did you know whose signature appears on U.S. banknotes? The Secretary of the Treasury.
Did you know that Martha Washington is the only woman whose face appears on a U.S. banknote? She's pictured on the obverse side in 1886 and 1891, and then on the reverse side in 1896.
Wait a minute. What about Sacagawea and Susan B. Anthony?
A good point. However, they were on coins, not banknotes.
Did you know that the date on U.S. banknotes designates the date of its design?
Did you know that the smallest denomination of a banknote that we've ever used was during the Civil War? It was called fractional currency, and it was worth 3 cents.
Earlier, we mentioned Susan B. Anthony and Sacagawea as women who are pictured on U.S. coins. But did you know that beginning in 2007, there was a series of first spouse coins that were minted? It started with Martha Washington, and is supposed to go through Mary Todd Lincoln.
Wait a minute. I've never seen even one of these coins.
And you're not likely to. Although they have a $10 value on them, they are uncirculated and have a recent price tag of between $700 and $800 per coin.
And finally, while the Canadian monetary unit is officially called the dollar, popularly it's called the loonie because it has the engraving of a loon on it. At least you can have a sense of humor during a financial crisis.
Bob, did you ever hold a loonie?
As a matter of fact, yes, I did.
Rubbed off, didn't it?
I think it's about time for another nursery rhyme.
Can I choose?
Sure, go ahead.
Thanks. Mary had a little lamb, its fleece as white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. It followed her to school one day, which was against the rule. It made the children laugh and play to see a lamb at school.
Okay, now, let me guess. This has got to have some kind of a great political implication. Maybe it refers to Queen Mary of England, known for her execution of Protestants while trying to reimpose Catholicism upon England. The lamb would refer to the executed Protestants, and the school is the trial process that condemned them, and the children laughing and playing have got to be the bishops enjoying the disposition of the heretic Protestants. And
Bob. Your imagination is running away with you. This is one nursery rhyme that has no political overtones. It is what it seems, a children's story. It seems that around 1815, a young girl from Boston, a Mary Sawyer, did go to school one day and was followed by a lamb. When called upon by the teacher to recite, the lamb also followed her to the front of the classroom, which annoyed the teacher, who promptly expelled the lamb.
A young man in the class, John Ralstone, was so amused by the scene that he wrote down a few lines of poem about it. Then, in 1830, a Miss Sarah Josepha Hale added some more lines and published the whole thing under her byline.
But what started out as a nice children's story has turned out to be a continuing historical battle. The people in Sterling, Massachusetts, where the incident supposedly took place, are in disagreement with the residents of Newport, New Hampshire, the home of Mrs. Sarah Hale, who claimed that she and she alone wrote it.
This is in spite of a letter from Mary Sawyer in 1879, who confirmed the Sterling version and said that John Ralstone did indeed write at least the opening of the story.
The residents of Newport countered by saying that no one of Mrs. Hale's reputation as an author would have to plagiarize a schoolboy.
Well, what's at stake here?
Pride.
And maybe a few tourist dollars?
So much for my nursery rhyme.
Hey, how about some bell time? Did you know Benjamin Franklin once gave guitar lessons?
Did you know that coffee contains over 1,000 different chemicals? 26 of them were tested to see if they cause cancer. 13 did.
Did you know Pontius Pilate was born in Scotland?
Did you know who owns the largest fleet of civilian vehicles in the world? The United States Post Office had 176,000 in 1999.
Did you know which sports celebrity appears on the covers of Time, Newsweek, and Sports Illustrated simultaneously in 1973? Secretariat.
Did you know that the average price of a movie ticket in 1940 was 24 cents?
Did you know that according to a 2005 report, a Gallup poll found that one out of every seven Americans could not identify the United States on the map of the world? Did you know that the first coin to feature the face of a president was the 1909 Lincoln penny?
Did you know that the first queen of the Artichoke Festival in Castroville, California in 1947 was Marilyn Monroe?
And did you know that at the time she was representing the Law Jewelry Company? I had a picture of it.
Let's have some more of our look into the history of the American flag. A flag with 13 stars and 13 stripes made perfect sense for a country with 13 states. However, in 1791, Vermont became a state, with Kentucky following the year after. Congress knew it was going to be an expensive proposition to adapt the flag to changing conditions. Just for the Navy, it would be $60 per ship, and the possible addition of more states was always in the future. In the end, pride won over cost, and in 1795, Congress passed an act that authorized 15 stripes and 15 stars.
By 1816, there were 19 states, and Mississippi was on the way, and there was no uniformity. The official flag had 15 stripes and stars, but as states came in, they added for themselves, unofficially, and one government building in Washington had 9 stripes. Something had to be done, so in 1817, Captain Sam Reed was asked to come up with a solution. His proposal was to return to the original 13 stripes, but have each state represented by their own star.
Though Congress drafted that proposal, and President James Madison signed it as the Flag Act of 1818 on April 4th, there were still some who didn't think it was that big a deal. Some congressmen resented having to waste time on the legislation, and one senator said, from the Senate floor, that this was a consummate piece of frivolity.
When there were 48 states, President Taft's 48-star flag remained the standard for nearly 47 years. Then Alaska and Hawaii were admitted in 1959. The House of Representatives introduced 3 different bills dealing with how to represent 50 stars. Maybe the comment by the congressman in 1818 that this is a waste of time wasn't totally out of line. President Eisenhower stepped in and issued an executive order. This is what the flag will look like. Do it. Now let's get back to other business.
The changes went into effect on July 4th, 1960, with the provision that allowed existing flags to continue flying until they wore out. That saved the expense of replacing more than 51,000 flags that flew outside of government buildings. The flag has remained unchanged ever since.
In short, We really didn't have a national flag until June 14, 1777. That's why we celebrate Flag Day on June 14th. And it wasn't until April 4th, 1818, that the basic form of the flag and all future flags was determined. However, the proper care and treatment of the national flag was not dealt with until December 22, 1942, with the Code of Flag Display and Use. Whatever had been earlier, a lack of interest in the flag was more than made up for with this meticulous description of flag handling, from the time to raise it to how to drape it over a coffin.
Some more bell time. Obviously, William Shakespeare is number one, but did you know who is the second most published playwright? Neil Simon.
Did you know what is the world's oldest profession? It's not what you think. The answer is witch doctor.
And that there is one time where it is legal for dead persons to vote, if they had mailed in a write-in ballot before they died.
That drunk ants will always fall over on their right side.
That if you want to hear the patter of little feet around the house, get a dog. It's cheaper and you get more feet.
And did you know that the average American dog will cost its owner $14,600 over its lifetime?
Wait, how did you learn that?
Well, I was lying there, watching.
What side were you lying on?
Oh, never mind. Now let's get back to the flag. Once the country had an approved national flag, you had to have an official salute to it, right? Well, yes, but not right away. And also, it seems, not for the most patriotic of reasons. We are approaching the year 1892, and the country was getting ready for the 400th anniversary of Columbus' discovery of America. The highlight of this celebration was going to be the Columbian Exposition, also known as the Chicago World's Fair.
Everybody wanted to be a part of the celebration, including a magazine named The Youth's Companion, which was like the Reader's Digest of its time. The editors of The Youth's Companion became sponsors of the National Public School celebration of the event.
They came up with the idea to have every public school honor the event by raising the flag and then having the school children recite a pledge to the flag. It was a great idea. Everybody loved it. But for it to work, they had to have a pledge for the children to recite.
The man they appointed to write the pledge was Francis Bellamy, a former Baptist minister who had been forced out of his Boston church pulpit for delivering socialist sermons. This is what he wrote. "I pledge allegiance to my flag and the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all."
According to the scholar John Bayer, Bellamy wanted to include the word equality in the pledge, but he knew it would never be approved by the state superintendents of education. You see, they didn't approve of equality for women or African Americans.
Starting with the exposition, the pledge entered the popular culture. But over the years, different groups wanted to change it. In 1923 and 1924, the National Flag Conference, under the leadership of the American Legion and the Daughters of the American Revolution, changed the words from "my flag" to "the flag of the United States of America." Bellamy objected to the changes, but his objections were ignored. Even if he had been the one who wrote it, who was he to object?
Then, in 1954, following a campaign by the Knights of Columbus, a Roman Catholic fraternal organization, and with the threat of godless communism in the air, Congress inserted the words "under God."
It became a patriotic pledge and a prayer. Bellamy's daughter said that he would never have agreed to that change.
We've had a look at some past history regarding the origin of our flag and of our pledge to the flag. In some degree, those involve what we feel about our country.
We thought it might be interesting to look at some things we know about our country.
I think what Parra is trying to say is, how about a quiz?
You're right, Bob. How about a quiz? Only this time, no more elephants in the refrigerator.
What elephant?
The one you put in the refrigerator a while ago.
Oh, no, no. I took him out and put the giraffe in. The giraffe! Oh, I forgot to take him out. Oh, he is going to be so mad. The cold always gives him a stiff neck.
Okay. We came across this quiz as a part of a civics lesson. We had fun with it, but we found out that when this was given nationally, 86% of all high school seniors failed to pass it, as did 50% of all people over 50 years old.
Well, how about all the rest of us who are under 50?
Your results are being forwarded along with your AARP renewal.
Never mind.
This is a multiple choice quiz, so we'll give you some of the questions and the choices. Ready, Para?
Ready.
Okay, here we go. What is the title of the national anthem? A. O Say Can You See? B. God Bless America? C. America the Beautiful? Or D. The Star-Spangled Banner?
The first line is O Say Can You See? But the proper title is The Star-Spangled Banner.
Okay. Bob, which of the following rights is guaranteed by the First Amendment? Right to bear arms, right to vote, freedom of religion, or all of the above?
The right to bear arms is in the Second Amendment, not the First. And there is no right to vote. Originally, women couldn't vote. It took future amendments to include blacks and women and people down to the age of 18, and a law to eliminate the poll tax. The only First Amendment guaranteed right is the freedom of religion.
Okay, Para, what is the title of the head of a city government? Mayor, governor, chancellor, or chairman of the board?
No matter what term opponents may use, and Frank Sinatra is not correct, the right answer is mayor.
Bob, who has the ability to declare war? The president, the secretary of defense, the joint chiefs, the Congress?
The correct answer is Congress. But did you know the only times there has been an official congressional declaration of war has been the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and World War II. No such declaration of war by Congress was given for our involvements in other hostilities.
Para, how many full terms may a senator serve? One, two, four, or no term limits for senators?
They are six-year terms, and there are no term limits.
Okay. How many full terms can a president serve? One, two, four, or there are no term limits for president?
Well, for the president, they are four-year terms, but only two.
Did you know there are always ways around that restriction? There is no prohibition for a former president to run as vice president. He can also run for the Senate or the House or to be appointed to the cabinet. And the Presidential Succession Act makes it possible, although improbable, that a former president might find his way to the White House again. All right, on to question number seven. How many years is the full term for a representative? One, two, four, or six?
The answer is 2 years.
Okay. Let's see here. Which amendment sets the minimum voting age to 18? The first, the 19th, the 18th, or the 26th?
The 26th. Ratified in 1971. Did you know that the 26th Amendment does not restrict voting age to that? If a state wanted to, it could reduce that age.
Okay, who becomes president if both the president and vice president die? The Speaker of the House, the Secretary of Defense, the Chief Justice, the First Lady?
Though Al Haig once charged in and announced, "I'm in charge," the answer is the Speaker of the House.
On July 4, 1776, we declared independence from whom? Germany, Great Britain, Spain, or Rome?
Great Britain.
Mm-hmm. How many branches of government do we have? One, two, three, or zero?
Though it might seem that government is everywhere, there are only three branches: executive, legislative, and judicial.
Which is part of the judicial branch at the federal level? The Supreme Court, the Congress, the Senate, the Presidential Cabinet?
The Supreme Court.
Who elects the President of the United States? The House of Representatives, the Electoral College, the Senate, the state governors?
Many people don't know this one. It is not the people, it is the Electoral College. In the presidential election, the people vote by states for representatives to the Electoral College. It is possible for someone to be elected president and not have received the most popular votes.
Did you know that it actually happened four times? In 1824, John Quincy Adams lost to Andrew Jackson by 44,804 votes. In 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes lost to Samuel Tilden by 264,292 votes. In 1888, William Henry Harrison lost to Grover Cleveland by 95,713 votes. And you have to remember this one.
And one we can all remember, right? In 2000, George W. Bush lost to Al Gore by 543,816 votes. Question 14.
Okay, how many states are there? 10, 13, 50, or 100?
That was just a matter of semantics a while ago when we talked about four of the states technically be called commonwealths. All the same, 50 states.
Okay. How many stripes are there on the American flag? 10, 13, 50, or 100?
For the 13 original colonies, 13.
Who was the President of the United States during the Civil War? Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Ulysses S. Grant, Lyndon B. Johnson.
Abraham Lincoln.
Who is the current President of the United States? Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Colin Powell, or Dick Cheney?
Barack Obama.
Who is the current Vice President of the United States? Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Colin Powell, or Joe Biden?
Joe Biden.
Why did the Pilgrims come to America? To establish a trade route with India? To set up fur trade with the natives? To establish a new nation? To find religious freedom?
They came to find freedom of religion, which they promptly denied to anyone else who didn't believe in what they did.
How true. How many total senators are there? 10, 13, 50, or 100?
Two per state. 100.
Wait a minute. Bob has his hand in the air. Yes?
I have to go.
All right.
No, not like that. I have to go take the giraffe out of the refrigerator.
Okay. How about some quickies until he gets back? We have some music trivia here. Did you know that in ancient Greece, boys began learning music at the age of 6?
Did you know that the average American spends 45 minutes a day listening to recorded music?
Did you know that the movie portrayal of the Von Trapp family in Sound of Music was not accurate? The movie shows Maria teaching them basics. Doe, a deer, a female deer, and all that. Actually, their mother, Agatha, played piano and violin. Their father, George, played violin, mandolin, and accordion. The place often sounded like a conservatory. When Maria came, she taught them madrigals and masses and arranged things for them in four-part harmony.
Did you know that the Woody Guthrie song, This Land Is My Land, is a protest against Irving Berlin's song, God Bless America?
Back in the jazz days, a popular song was Hold That Tiger. Do you know what the tiger was?
I'd guess a regular tiger. That would be hard to hold.
Yes, it would. But also hard to hold would be the lowest poker hand possible. 5 of the bottom 6 cards, deuce through 7, without a pair. 2-3-4-6-7, or 2-4-5-6-7, like that. That's your tiger.
Did you know a 2003 survey of Austrian mall workers stated that a non-stop playing of Christmas carols was considered to be a form of psychological terror?
Did you know that the best-selling artist of all time in Iran is Liza Minnelli?
Did you know that Spain's national anthem, they have no official lyrics?
Did you know that rock and roll star Jerry Lee Lewis and evangelist Jimmy Swaggart are second cousins, and they spent time together as kids?
Did you know that the Jordanaires, the gospel singing group, sang backup for lots of Elvis Presley songs?
I'm back.
By the way, how was the giraffe?
Sound asleep. He was resting in the Westinghouse.
Okay, back to our quiz. These last questions about what we know about our government are a little harder. And so, as I turn the page here, we find question number 21. The Constitution has how many amendments? 23, 27, 31, or 33?
27. 202 years after its initial submission and ratified in 1997, this amendment prohibits any increase in congressional salaries until the next session starts. The lawmakers can't increase their own salaries.
How many amendments have been proposed officially by Congress but never ratified? None, 1, 6, or 12?
Believe it or not, the answer is 6.
Which of these amendments is a ratified and current amendment? Declaring it illegal to desecrate the American flag? Equality of rights, regardless of gender? Restricting marriage in all states to be between a man and a woman? Or prohibiting the importing of liquor into states where it is illegal.
Prohibits the importing of liquor into states where it is illegal. It was done with the 21st Amendment ratified in 1933.
No, well, wait a minute. Isn't this the amendment that abolished prohibition?
It did do that, but it also made it illegal to transport liquor into states that remained dry. So for a time, you better not take a bottle of Kentucky bourbon with you to Mississippi. Mississippi was the last state to do away with dry laws in 1966. And until 1987, Kansas forbade bars. And did you know that the 21st Amendment was the only one not to have been ratified by state legislatures? So many lawmakers were afraid of the influence of local temperance groups that they opted for state conventions rather than approval by state legislatures.
Well, that just goes to prove that lobbyists really don't have any influence over lawmakers.
Did you know also that North Carolina refused to call a state convention to vote for the amendment? We are in favor of tobacco, but not whiskey.
Okay, number 24. In what year was the last amendment ratified? 1868, 1920, 1961, or 1992?
The 27th, in 1992, dealing with Congress raising their own salaries.
Number 25 here. What is the official language of the United States? Latin, English, Esperanto, or none?
There has been a couple of attempts to establish this one, but the attempts failed. The United States does not have an official language.
Who was the first Vice President of the United States? George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, or Andrew Jackson?
John Adams.
Who said, "Give me liberty or give me death"? Nathan Hale, Patrick Henry, John Wilkes Booth, or Thomas Paine?
In front of the Virginia Convention on March 23, 1775, that was Patrick Henry.
How many presidents were assassinated while in office? One, two, four, or six?
Four. Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, and Kennedy.
Which of these presidents was born in Texas? Dwight D. Eisenhower, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, or George W. Bush?
This one catches a lot of people. Bush was the 46th governor of Texas and has his ranch outside of Crawford, Texas, but he was born in New Haven, Connecticut. Did you know it was Dwight Eisenhower?
How many presidents have been impeached? One, two, four, or none?
Remember, impeachment is the accusation, not the conviction. The answer is two. Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. Nixon resigned before the impeachment.
Well, how did you do on the test?
I got them all right.
Yeah, but you had the questions beforehand.
Well, more important, I had the answers.
One of the questions on the quiz dealt with the six amendments that were never ratified. Did you know what they were? Two date back to the framing of the Constitution. One dealt with how representatives are apportioned by population, and the other would have outlawed titles of nobility.
One would have allowed states to dictate slavery within their own boundaries, and one would have given the federal government control over child labor laws.
And the last two would have given residents of the District of Columbia full representation in Congress and to guarantee women equal rights.
Speaking of equal rights amendment, I have a couple of did you knows for you. Did you know there was a doctor named James Barry who in 1808 entered Edinburgh Medical School at age 15? He became a respected surgeon and rose to the position of Inspector General of Hospitals. His greatest fame came in pushing for sanitation reform for soldiers, hospital patients, and general citizens. He is credited with performing the first successful C-section on an African woman where both mother and child lived.
Or how about Charlie Parkhurst? Did you know he had the reputation of being one of the toughest stagecoach drivers in the Old West? He once raced a team across a rickety bridge and reached the other side as the bridge collapsed behind him. On another occasion, he was stopped by robbers. He shot the leader and escaped with all passengers and goods intact.
Or how about Billy Tipton? Did you know he was a popular jazz musician in Washington State from the 1930s, clear through the 1980s? He had been married three times, the last marriage lasting 19 years. He had three children, all adopted.
So why mention these three people? Upon their deaths, it was discovered they were all women. They had to hide their true identities because society didn't allow women to display all their talents. Only women's roles need apply.
You might be surprised that all the women who fought either by themselves or side by side with their husbands in the Civil War. So, what do you think?
I think it's time for another story.
I have a story for you. It's a piece of inside history that you have to hear. Now, the only reporter to record it was Louis Grisard. Here's the story. Now, it didn't happen in North Carolina, but nearby. It seems that after Sherman had taken Atlanta, he was marching out I-75 towards Savannah when he noticed, up on the top of a hillside, one lone Confederate soldier waving his arms and cussing after the Yankee troops. Well, Sherman can't have this. There was pride at stake. So he sent a soldier up there to take care of that loudmouth Reb. He never come back. But the lone Confederate soldier continued to berate the Federals. This time Sherman sent up 10 soldiers. Not only did none of them come back, but the hollering got louder. Sherman next sent up a whole platoon with orders to silence that blankety-blank no matter what it took. None of them returned. And now that lone Confederate boy was near deranged, hopping up and down and screeching names at Sherman that would have made the horses blush. Needless to say, Sherman was himself becoming near apoplectic. He took 150 of his fiercest troops and ordered them to get up there and bring silence to the world, right now. Up that hill they charged, over the top and out of sight. About half an hour later, one Union soldier come limping back, bruised and bloody and generally just all beat up. Sherman yelled at him, "What in tarnation's going on up there?" The poor soldier was all but crying, "Sir, it's a trap. There's two of them up there." And that's a true story. It really happened.
I was just thinking about something I heard a long time ago.
What was that, Kurt?
That if you do something good, it will always come back to reward you.
I agree with that one.
Oh, I'm not so sure I do.
Okay, Bob, I can prove it to you.
Yeah, Kurt.
It's a lesson I gained from Basic Grammar.
Okay.
You can express a positive with a double negative.
Such as,
I'm not totally disbelieving what you're telling me.
Exactly. It means he doesn't deny what I said. He's listening.
Go on.
But there is no way you can express a negative with a double positive.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Bob.
Now, I have a couple of stories for you to think about.
Are they true stories?
Absolutely. They really happened.
Yeah, right.
Yay, para.
Okay. In 1994, the New York City's Metropolitan Transit Authority docked a driver's pay for being 12 minutes late for his shift. His excuse? He had stopped to pull a man out of a burning car on a freeway.
I'll help you, Bob. In 1995, the then New York Jets quarterback, Boomer Esiason, was driving home after a game that the Jets had lost 28-24 to Miami Dolphins. He had to stop because of an accident. He got out and asked the woman in front of him if she was all right. Her window was broken, and she was crying and looked at him and said, "Boomer, you guys really stink. How'd you lose that game today?"
I read that in 1981, Peter Stankiewicz of Rockville, Maryland, stopped his car and dove into the Potomac River to rescue a driver whose truck had crashed through the railing and plunged 60 feet into the water. When he came back, he found that his car had been towed because it was blocking traffic.
In 1993, Lorne Murdoch saw a delivery truck collide with a car in Los Angeles. He pulled over and rushed forward to comfort the driver until help arrived. When he got back to where he left his car, he found that someone had stolen it. The responding officer reportedly told him, "Well, that's what you get for being a good Samaritan."
Not just in Los Angeles. In Cincinnati, in 1997, Sylvia Slayton was trying to help by putting coins in someone's expired parking meter. She put a dime and a nickel in two expired meters. Thanked? Not quite. She was arrested, handcuffed, and convicted of interfering with a police officer trying to ticket overdue cars. Instead of a thank you, she faces the possibility of a 90-day jail sentence and a fine of $750 in exchange for 15 cents.
In 1982, Timothy George, a part-time busboy at a family restaurant in Vallejo, California, chased and captured a mugger who had robbed a customer in the men's room. He was promptly fired for leaving work and fighting.
And it isn't just humans that will turn around and bite you. In 1994, Don Weston found a seagull squawking in his driveway in Gloucester, England. He put it up on top of the garage to keep it safe from cats. A few hours later, it flew off. Weston thought he was doing a good deed, but for the next 3 years, the seagull came back to squawk at him and dive-bomb him and drop all sorts of, things at him.
I guess it isn't just elephants that never forget, especially good deeds.
Yeah, right.
Okay, point taken. Maybe not every good thing you do will reward you.
Or maybe it does. It's just a reward that might mean more than money.
Yay, para.
Right. But maybe from the opposite side, sooner or later, bad things will come back to bite you.
Do you have a story for that one?
Yes, I do. Let me start it this way. Did you know who may have been the most influential author of all time? And before you guess, let me tell you that, as hard as it is for me to say, it's not William Shakespeare.
I don't know. Maybe Dr. Spock?
Well, I'm not sure of his influence, but I know who has written more books and stories and poems than anyone else in the world.
Who's that?
Anonymous. Oh, he's everywhere.
Yeah, right.
All right, since influential is so subjective, many answers might be given. But way up on the list is going to be Aesop. Let me read you one of his stories. A long time ago, a group of mice held a meeting to develop a plan on how to defeat their common enemy, the cat. Some said they should do this, some said they should do that. Finally, one young mouse got up and said that he had a proposal to make. He said, "I think you'll all agree that our chief danger consists in the sly and treacherous manner in which the enemy approaches us. Now, if we could receive some signal of the cat's approach, we could easily escape it. I propose, then, that a small bell be procured and attach it with a ribbon to the cat's neck. Then we would know whenever the cat was coming near." The proposal met with general applause until one old mouse got up and said, "That is very well, but who is to bell the cat?" The mice looked at one another, but nobody spoke. The old mouse said, "It is easy to propose impossible remedies."
That's one of Aesop's fables?
Yep.
Oh, I remember that story from old Saturday morning cartoons.
Just one part of the popularity. They were written in the 6th century BCE, survived the Dark Ages, and they were translated by a 13th century Turkish monk. In the mid-1400s, when the Italians became interested in antiquity, they were translated alongside of Homer and Aristotle. Even Martin Luther in the 1500s translated some of them and said that next to the Bible, he valued Aesop above all other books. To the present, they have been much translated both in the East and the West and have been read by inhabitants of all countries.
Did you know? I've even seen them on Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yes, you have.
Oh, they're great stories. But I don't remember one that teaches that bad things are going to come back and bite you.
Maybe not the stories, but how about Aesop himself? He was born in the 6th century BCE and was a Greek slave. He had a natural talent for wit and storytelling and became so famous that his storytelling earned him his freedom. He began traveling around the ancient world, telling his stories until Croesus, the king of Lydia, invited him to become an ambassador. He was sent to the various republics of Greece, trying to establish peace.
His last mission was to Delphi. Croesus sent a quantity of gold with Aesop. He was to distribute the gold among the people of Delphi, but Aesop was so outraged by the greed shown by the people that he sent the money back to Croesus. Rather than being ashamed of their behavior, the Delphians became outraged, accused Aesop of impiety, and executed him as a public criminal. Legend has it that they killed him by pushing him off of a cliff.
Did they send any threatening notes first?
As in cliff notes? Following his execution, a myth grew up that a series of calamities befell the citizens of Delphi. The disasters got worse and worse until, in true Greek fashion, the people of the city confessed their guilt and made reparations. After that, the blood of Aesop became a common reference to the belief that no evil deed would go unpunished.
Did you know that Aesop also said, "We hang petty thieves, but appoint the great ones to public office"?
There was once a county fair, and a buffoon was making a crowd of people laugh by imitating different animals. He finished off by squealing like a pig. The people thought that he had a real pig hidden somewhere. They laughed and applauded more when it was found that it was just him. Then a country fellow spoke up. "You call that a pig squeal? You wait until tomorrow. I'll show you what it's like."
The next day, the country fellow appeared on the stage, put his hand into a sack, and there then came such a hideous squealing that the spectators hissed at him and threw stones at him to make him stop. "You fools," cried out the country fellow, "look at what you've been hissing at." And he pulled out a real pig. The country fellow had been pinching his ears to make him squeal.
And the moral of the story is, men often applaud an imitation and hiss at the real thing.
One final thought about our citizenship test. Did you know there were actually 7 people who, over the course of time, were granted honorary U.S. citizenship? You might be interested in who they were and what they did to earn such an honor.
The first granted was in 1963 to Winston Churchill, British Prime Minister and the moving force behind the British war effort during the Second World War.
In 1981, Raoul Wallenberg. He was born in Sweden and educated in the United States. When he returned to Sweden, he was given a post in Haifa. Later recruited by the United States to oversee the treatment of Jews in Hungary. Through his efforts, thousands of Jewish lives were saved that otherwise would have been lost during the Holocaust. After the war, he was arrested by the Soviets and accused of being an American spy. Not sure if he was still alive, the 1981 honor was made as an attempt to gain access to him.
William Penn. He was the founder and governor of the colony that was to bear his name, the state of Pennsylvania. He was honored in 1984, posthumously.
Hannah Calloway Penn, the second wife of William Penn. After his death, she effectively controlled the activities of the young colony, also awarded in 1984.
Mother Teresa, the Albanian nun who founded the Missionaries of Charity in India and dedicated her life to helping the poor in India, awarded in 1996.
General Lafayette, he was the French officer, hero of the Revolutionary War. In 1784, the Maryland Assembly honored Lafayette, and he was made a citizen of Maryland, as well as Connecticut, in 1823. He was declared an honorary U.S. citizen in 2002.
And last, Casimir Pulaski. He was a member of the Polish nobility who fought against Russian domination of the Polish-Lithuanian Confederation. He then came to America with the personal recommendation of Benjamin Franklin and fought during the Revolution. He is credited with being the father of the American cavalry. In 1777, his efforts at the Battle of Brandywine saved the life of George Washington. He died during the Siege of Savannah. His honor was awarded in 2009.
Lafayette and Mother Teresa were honored directly by Act of Congress. For the other 5, an act of Congress was passed authorizing the president to grant the honorary citizenship.
I think we have time for a few more bell ringers. Did you know what you can add to a 20-pound barrel of water to make it weigh 12 pounds? Holes.
Did you know before Mount Everest was discovered, what was the highest mountain on the earth? Mount Everest. It was still there whether we knew about it or not.
Did you know how many bricks it takes to complete a 3,000-square-foot brick house? Just one.
Did you know that in Oklahoma, you can't take a picture of a man with a wooden leg? You need a camera!
Did you know what starts with an E, ends with an E, and usually has one letter? An envelope.
Did you know which building has the most letters in it? The post office.
And did you know that the word smiles is the longest word in the English language? There's a mile between the first letter and the last letter. And one final did you know. What is red, white, and blue and has 13 stripes and 50 stars? This program was dedicated to the remembrance of the Flag Act of 1818, enacted on April 4th.
But as our little quiz tried to suggest, we need to know our past and the continuing commitments we made to it through our Constitution.
And sometimes our failures.
And especially with our sometime failures. We hope to a future still committed to, we believe these truths to be self-evident, that all men
and women
and people of every racial and ethnic background
are created equal.
One nation under God with liberty and justice for all.
That such a nation of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
The Flag Goes by Henry Holcomb Bennett. Hats off! Along the street there comes a blare of bugles, a ruffle of drums, a flash of color beneath the sky. Hats off! The flag is passing by. Blue and crimson and white it shines over the steel-tipped ordered lines. Hats off! The colors passes fly, but more than a flag it is that's passing by. Sea fights and land fights, grim and great, fought to make and to save the state. Weary marches and sinking ships, cheers of victory on dying lips. Days of plenty and years of peace, march of a strong land swift increase. Equal justice, right and law, stately honor and reverend awe. Sign of a nation great and strong to ward her people from foreign wrong. Pride and glory and honor all. Live in the colors to stand or fall. Hats off! Along the street there comes a blare of bugles, a ruffle of drums, and loyal hearts are beating high. Hats off! The flag is passing by. America for Me by Henry Van Dyke. 'Tis fine to see the old world and travel up and down among the famous palaces and cities of renown, to admire the crumbly castles and the statues of the kings, but now I think I've had enough of antiquated things. So it's home again, and home again, America for me. My heart is turning home again, and there I long to be, in the land of youth and freedom beyond the ocean bars, where the air is full of sunlight and the flag is full of stars. Oh, London is a man's town, there's power in the air. And Paris is a woman's town with flowers in her hair. And it's sweet to dream in Venice, and it's great to study Rome, but when it comes to living, there is no place like home. I like the German fir woods, the green battalions drilled. I like the gardens of Versailles with flashing fountains filled. But oh, to take your hand, my dear, and ramble for a day in the friendly western woodland where nature has her way. I know that Europe's wonderful, yet something seems to lack. The past is too much with her, and the people looking back. But the glory of the present is to make the future free. We love our land for what she is, and what she is to be. Oh, it's home again and home again, America for me. I want a ship that's westward bound to plow the rolling sea to the blessed land of room enough beyond the ocean bars, where there's air that's full of sunlight and a flag that's full of stars. The Fool's Prayer by Edward Sill. The royal feast was done. The king sought some new sport to banish care, and to his jester cried, "Sir Fool, kneel now and make for us a prayer." The jester doffed his cap and bells and stood the mocking court before. They could not see the bitter smile behind the painted grin he wore. He bowed his head and bent his knee upon the monarch's silken stool. His pleading voice arose, "O Lord, be merciful to me, a fool." No pity, Lord, could change the heart from red with wrong to white as wool. The rod must heal the sin, but Lord, be merciful to me, a fool. 'Tis not by guilt the onward sweep of truth and right, O Lord, we stay. 'Tis by our follies that so long we hold the earth from heaven away. These clumsy feet still in the mire go crushing blossoms without end. These hard, well-meaning hands we thrust among the heartstrings of a friend. The ill-timed truth we might have kept, who knows how sharp it pierced and stung? The word we had not sense to say, who knows how grandly it had rung? Our faults no tenderness should ask, the chastening stripes must cleanse them all. But for our blunders, oh, in shame, before the eyes of heaven we fall. Earth bears no balsam for mistakes. Men crown the knave and scourge the tool that did his will. But thou, O Lord, be merciful to me, a fool. The room was hushed. In silence rose the king, and sought his gardens cool, and walked apart, and murmured low, "Be merciful to me, a fool." If, by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give the way to hating, and yet don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat these two impostures just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings, and never breed a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but not too much, if you can feel the unforgiving minute, every second second's worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
This is Kurt Benrud for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening in to another edition of Did You Know?
This is Parra Tolleson. This program's designed for a print and visually impaired audience.
And this is Bob Martin. Initial broadcasts of Did You Know? Thursdays at 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon, and Sunday evenings at 8.
Triangle Radio Reading Service is proud to be of service to the Triangle area. We strive to present quality programming to the community that is print and visually impaired. If you know someone who is print or visually impaired, we can provide them with a subchannel receiver so they can hear our particular kind of programming. Just call us at 832-5138.
If you would be willing to help support the work of the Triangle Radio Reading Service and the programming that it provides, please call us at 919-832-5138.
One last thought. Do you know what question you could never honestly answer yes to? Are you asleep?
Well, are you?
Bob? Bob?
Yes. Does that count as an answer?
Goodbye.